Hello, I'm Manuela Zaragoza, and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Coming up, robots, are they friend or foe?
The speed with which things are improving, ask yourself, where are we going to be in 10 years? Where are we going to be in 30 years? That's where it gets really exciting, and I think AI is going to ultimately be either the best thing ever for humanity or the worst thing.
So we're asking how people and economies can adapt to the age of artificial intelligence. That's all in Business Daily from the BBC. What's the biggest threat the world faces right now? Well, if you're Elon Musk, the high-profile tech entrepreneur who's behind the push for self-driving cars, it's not North Korea's current nuclear threat, but artificial intelligence. His comment this week came after a group of over 100 tech leaders last month sent an open letter to the UN calling for it to ban the development of lethal autonomous weapons, what are known as killer robots. They warned an arms race for this sort of AI is underway, mirroring the rapid changes artificial intelligence is already imposing on economies around the world. Here's a recap.
I keep sounding the alarm bell, but you know, until people see like robots going down the street killing people, like they don't know how to react.
They can already clean your floor, cook your food, be your companion, or go to war. The concept of a robot for every human task is well advanced, and experts say within 2 decades there could be more robots on Earth than people.
New worries about robots taking jobs. More than 3 out of 14 say they're concerned about having a successful career because of automation and global competition.
Elon Musk, the first voice there in that montage, speaking about the dangers of AI. So how do we prepare for these changes? Can we even prepare for them? And should we manage our relationship with machines in a different way? Or how should we manage them effectively? Well, a big thinker in the field of AI is Max Tegmark. He's a physicist who co-founded the Future of Life Institute. The Institute's other founders include cosmologist Stephen Hawking and people like the Skype founder Jan Tallinn. Max Tegmark has just published a book about what it means to be human in an age of artificial intelligence. In it, he recounts how he was left in tears after a recent visit to London's Science Museum. I asked him what prompted those tears.
Well, it really hit me that we've traditionally thought of intelligence as something mysterious that can only exist in biological organisms, especially humans. But from my perspective as a physicist, intelligence is simply a certain kind of information processing performed by elementary particles moving around according to the laws of physics. And there's no law of physics that says that one can't build machines more intelligent than us in all ways. And the exhibits in this museum just really made me wonder about if we finally understood how to do this and unlock the full intelligence that's latent in nature. You know, what would the role be for us?
You didn't think there would be much of a role for us at that point.
Well, looking back now, I'm cautiously optimistic. I feel that we can create a wonderful future with artificial intelligence if we win this race between the growing power of the AI and the growing wisdom with which we manage it. But to do that, though, we urgently need to wake up and invest a lot into AI safety research. For example, how can we transform today's buggy and hackable computers into robust AI systems that we can really trust? I mean, it's annoying enough when your laptop crashes, but annoying isn't the word you would use if it's your electric grid or the AI that controls your nuclear weapon system.
The fact is, isn't it, that computers are still pretty dumb at the moment. I mean, yes, we can do a lot of things with them. Are we overestimating what AI can do?
Today, computers are still quite dumb. But what's so exciting in the field is that we're creating machines now that in a totally different way. It used to be that you had to actually tell a chess computer how to play chess, and then it could maybe beat the world's best players by simply thinking faster. Today's AI is largely learning for itself from massive data sets, enabling it to get much better than its creators. And this opens up the exciting possibility that in the future, AI can really help amplify our own human intelligence in major ways and help us solve all the problems that plague us today, or to screw up in new ways, which is why we need to do the safety research and get those answers by the time we need them.
But even Google Translate, because there has been a bit of a jump in Google Translate because they've started using self-learning AI to learn how to translate things properly and in context. But even that, I mean, it's better, but it's still pretty rubbish.
Of course, but that's today, 2017. But look at the speed with which things are improving. And ask yourself, where are we going to be in 10 years? Where are we going to be in 30 years? That's where it gets really exciting. And I think AI is going to ultimately be either the best thing ever for humanity or the worst thing. And I think we have a great shot at making it the best if we do our homework now and do the research to make sure to keep it safe and beneficial and don't just bumble into this, you know, with our eyes closed.
So what, for example, do we need to beware of?
We really need to study harder how to make machines understand and adopt and retain our goals. You know, if you take a future self-driving cab to Heathrow and ask it to get you there as fast as possible and you arrive covered in vomit and chased by helicopters, you'll be like, no, that's not what I asked for. And if it replies to you, that is exactly what you asked for, then you've appreciated how hard it is to make machines understand our goals.
And what about jobs? Is that something that you think governments are sufficiently concerned about?
I think a lot of people are still in denial. First of all, we as individuals, when we give career advice to our kids and friends, should encourage people to go for jobs that machines are bad at, you know, involving people, unpredictability, creativity, and avoid careers like telemarketers, warehouse workers, cashiers, train operators, truck drivers and stuff that are likely to disappear soon. And second, governments should really think hard about how they can make sure that technology growth doesn't continue to exacerbate the inequality that's happening. The reason that Brexit happened, that Donald Trump got elected, is because there are a lot of very angry people there who are angry for a very good reason, namely their absolute wages have gone down.
That was Max Tegmark of the Future of Life Institute. We can speak now to Noel Sharkey, another leading voice in the field of AI. He's Professor of Artificial Intelligence and Robots and Professor of Public Engagement at the University of Sheffield. He's also co-director of the Foundation for Responsible Robotics. Thanks very much for coming on to Business Daily, Professor Sharkey.
Hello. And
let me start by asking you, because it's something that Max Tegmark mentions as well, whether governments are sufficiently engaged in the whole thing of automation and loss of jobs. Do you see any sign that governments and intergovernmental institutions are heeding the sort of warning we're hearing from leaders in the field of robotics, the sort of warning given by Elon Musk?
Absolutely not. There's separate things there, the warnings given by Elon Musk and the warning about jobs. I mean, there are many, many things about robotics and AI at the moment and the impact on society that are not being looked at. There's absolutely no joined up thinking whatsoever that I can find from governments. The United States last year looked at AI, President Obama looked at it, but nothing came of that. It was just a few statements and a bit of paper.
Is that because it's just all moving too fast?
I think it's partly because governments are seeing artificial intelligence at the moment and robotics as economic drivers. They're prizing them as goals to achieve so that the country can make much more money. And people are also very concerned by competition. So other countries are developing them. There's a kind of race going on, an AI race, which is one of the problems.
So explain your position as regards to the use of robotics. I mean, how are we doing generally?
Well, I think we're doing very well. I mean, as Max said, it could have great benefit to mankind. I mean, particularly humanitarian use of the technology and environmental use, so protecting us from climate change, repairing it, farming, food efficiency, feeding more people. There's all those things. But I think we're moving rather fast on the front of, with artificial intelligence rather than robotics, we're moving very fast on the front of using artificial intelligence to delegating decisions to it that I don't think we're ready for. Legal decisions about parole, about sentencing, about getting bail. We're looking at jobs. We're looking at, you know, a lot of bias coming up, gender bias, race bias coming out, and it's much too fast. We need stronger regulation.
Give me an example of where that's happened.
Well, one example is, young black woman who was arrested for stealing a bicycle very stupidly. She just
grabbed
it.
This is in America?
Yes. She grabbed it, cycled off with it, and, in the United States, cycled off with it and, you know, somebody shouted after her and she dropped it on the ground and ran away and was caught and arrested. And they looked at her, you know, what's her chance of recidivism, of reoffending? And that was 8 out of 10.
And that was done by an algorithm, was it?
Yes, it was done by an algorithm. That was 8 out of 10 she got. Another white guy, by comparison, was arrested for shoplifting, and he had previous convictions for armed robbery, and he got a score of 3. She's never offended since, and he's in prison doing a long sentence for you know, violence, crime.
What needs to happen for that to change, for those kind of biases not to be there?
It's difficult because AI has become about using big data for training algorithms. So you train the algorithm, and I don't want to get into the whole training business, but essentially you're left with a big box full of matrices of numbers that are completely non-transparent. But these big data ossify our values in society and amplify them historically. So it's all the data is historical. And so it can pick out features like it might pick out a feature for jobs, for instance, that young women have a greater tendency to get pregnant and will take time off work, so might not be a good employee. That's the kind of bias that's in there. But we don't know what kind of bias is in there because we can't see it. There's no labels in there. So it can be biased in very subtle ways, biased in terms of this person's more likely to have depression. They might be in more of an insurance risk as a result. So the people can't explain it. And I think there should be simple regulation that says if an algorithm algorithmic decision impacts on someone's life, they should be able to get an explanation from the company as to how that worked, a clear explanation. And you can't do that with machine learning algorithms. And if they can't give them an explanation, then the algorithm should be shut down and not used again, and the company should be prosecuted for it.
I suppose some people might argue these algorithms are simply reflecting the biases that exist in humanity. So in fact, it's almost like an extension of humanity.
Yes, but you can probe the human to find out why they did it. You can sack the human. You can hold them accountable, and they have meaning in our lives. So you think this person's not a very good interviewer, there's been a lot of complaints about them, so you get someone else. They do reflect this, but they reflect the whole of society in a very filtered way. I mean, we saw how the Tay program released on the as a chatbot on Twitter became a complete misogynist within 24 hours because of the kind of data it was picking up from Twitter sphere. That doesn't mean we should go along with this.
So very briefly, I mean, what would you like to see happen in the next few years that would give you confidence that we are, you know, channeling robotics in the right direction?
Well, we need to look a lot at kind of regulation. I'm not a big believer in over-regulation and law because it can stifle innovation, but we need to look at it subtly. The country needs our country, and internationally, we need a robots council. Okay. And an AI council that can actually look at these issues. We need to take issues to the Human Rights Council and develop a new bill of digital human rights. That's what I would suggest.
We have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Professor Noel Sharkey there of the Foundation for Responsible Robotics. Well, those wages that we heard Max Tegmark talking about, wages going down because of automation, is no small part because of AI. It's a situation which sees AI as the enemy. At the same time, though, we are increasingly letting artificial intelligence into our homes. Over to our regular commentator, James Rhodes.
I worry that my neighbor Jasper has developed an unwholesome dependency on his home robot apps. He has a number of them, and they appeared useful enough at first. One travels back and forth around his house, vacuuming the floor. Another turns the lights on in his house on and off. Another portions out the medications that all of us old-timers take, and then alerts him when to take each batch. Then there is the one I call Orwell, after George Orwell and his dystopian novel, 1984. You probably know the one I'm talking about. Jasper's daughter gave Orwell to him for Christmas. It's a small box, sits on his kitchen table, and he can ask it questions, get recipes, select music, and play it, answer questions such as who won the baseball World Series in 1960. Yes, Pittsburgh Pirates with Bill Mazeroski's walk-off home run. But last week, I was going to take my wife out to dinner and mentioned it to Jasper over the back fence. "Oh, well," he said, "Orwell says you have to go to Chez Ritzy. It's the hot new restaurant in town." I said I thought we might try an old favorite, the frog and peach. Jasper dashed into the house and returned with news that Orwell vetoed the frog and peach, and I must go to Shea Ritzy or stay home. Orwell, according to my friend, has even cast some doubts about my recent retirement fund investments, even though I never asked Jasper or Orwell. I even suspect that Orwell helped Jasper pick who to vote for in last November's presidential election. A truly frightening thought. What I think bothers me the most is the way robot devices are increasingly being invented to isolate the growing world population of the elderly. By 2050, it is predicted that the cohort of folks over 60 in the world will have doubled to 2 billion. In Japan, which is aging more quickly than most industrial nations, there's already a critical shortage of healthcare providers for the aged. Japanese response is to install robot companions that remind oldsters when their medications are due. They play mind-building games and even have little faces that smile and sing songs. Not every oldster has children nearby, but Jasper does, only he spends less time with them. "I don't want to be a bother," he says. And he spends more time with Orwell. I find that a little creepy, frankly. Now, I concede I'm lucky. I don't need a robot chum. My wife still functions on all cylinders. She doesn't need batteries, forgets nothing, and has even prepared our tax returns year after year. She may veto my choice of necktie, but she doesn't tell me how to vote and agreed that a night out at the Frog and Peach was better than Shea Ritzy. I think Jasper needs to start going to the tea dances at the local senior center and give Orwell a rest. This is James Schroeds for the BBC World Service, still taking his own advice in Washington.
He's a long time from being automated. That's it from this Business Daily. Let us know what you think. You can get in touch on Twitter at BBC World Biz or my own Twitter handle at Manuela BBC. Stay tuned to us here on the BBC World Service.